This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All this time, Porter, everything you've done, everything you've said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz going to be here. Papa Fritz is here.
Special Christmas special, episode zero, the Christmas special. And wow, we're gonna be looking at the December 25th, 1981 Christmas Star Wars show. And man, of course, we're gonna do a deep dive into this. And I'm with Kelly Nelson and Johnny Sorrow. Man, Kelly, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Johnny, how you doing, brother?
I'm exhausted, but you know, here's the thing. The Star Wars Christmas special is better than this show.
Yeah, I agree, man. That was a good one. This was honestly terrible. Now, one thing, though, I would say is I think it's neat because obviously this is it predates what we have on the service, so this is not something you can find on the network.
No,
but it came out of the WWE archives, and it'd be kind of neat though if they do this every Thanksgiving, Christmas, load up a couple specials from some of the territories. As we know, they obviously have some world class. You know, they have some of the Carolinas. We've seen some stuff out of the out of Georgia. I think it'd be kind of neat just to throw it up on the network here and there for like a holiday special type of theme for the day type of thing.
Yeah. This was apparently from the on demand service.
Yeah.
But I had never seen it, and that on demand service was my favorite thing for a while there. Loved it. But, I watched all the world class, and I guess I missed this one.
Yeah, I don't ever remember seeing this, and I know we did not have it for the nominations for the Death Valley Driver set. Not like any of the shit would make it. But what about you, Kelly? Could you get a hanker if they did some of these specials for the holidays on the network? Get behind it?
Oh, totally. I'm all for more old content on the network, and more content we haven't seen before. Like, I'm not sure. Maybe they do have some of the old Thanksgiving Georgia shows from the Omni. That'd be cool.
Yeah,
because they had.
I mean, they came up with the damn last freaking.
Yeah, last battle of Atlanta.
Atlanta. I mean, they could almost have anything in that damn vault of theirs.
Yeah, that is an interesting unexplored area of the vault, because it seems like they probably do have more Georgia stuff, more Omni stuff. So that'd be cool. The Carolinas had Thanksgiving shows every year. I don't know if any of them predating Starcade made tape. I don't think so.
You never know. You know, they came across Boogie Jam.
Yeah.
That Steamboat Flair match ended up on a Steamboat DVD. So
yeah.
You just have no idea what the hell they have in that damn thing. Mm-hmm. I mean,
neither do they.
This is
that's
true.
Because that's how true. Because that's how Last Battle of Atlanta was found, if I remember correctly.
Yep,
it was the guys who were down there doing that went, wait, what? You know, mm-hmm. Which isn't entirely on them. They acquired all this stuff, and we all know how this stuff was stored and labeled, and you know, so
hopefully, the promoters didn't care. I mean, even hardcore collectors. I mean, like Will, he gave me a damn, like, three dump bins of discs, you know? I mean, so, and he, you know, and he, that was his hobby. mean,
well, at least he didn't, leave them in the back seat of his car to melt, because that was always the story. That was always the story you'd hear.
Very true. But, man, let's get into this. This is held at Reunion Arena.
Yeah.
So it definitely looks a lot fuller than the damn Cowboys Stadium. And we open up with a brass knuckles match with Jose Lothario versus Ernie Ladd. Kelly, what were you thinking when you see this matchup? Because Ladd's gigantic. Lothario, it looks puny, and so does David Manning next to the man.
Yeah. Well, just a few notes about the undercard. There was a couple matches that we didn't get to see. Apparently the opener was El Negro Assassin, one of our favorites. Wrestling Richard Blood to a 15-minute time limit draw.
Woo!
Yeah.
Oh boy.
And then we had the Midgets.
Yay!
Yeah. Tiny
Which
Tom.
Goes to Johnny's theory, because obviously Andre didn't make it, so no. I guess Plan B was the Midgets.
Yeah.
Who were they?
Tiny Tom defeated Little Tokyo. And yeah, that's true. Like, I was thinking earlier about how this is a supercard, basically. And yeah, they didn't have any big outside names for it at all.
Or any Ladd.
Yeah, but I think Ladd had spent quite a bit of time in the territory.
Yeah, in 1981. He was the champ.
He was the brass knucks champ. I looked, he was, because this is the third Star Wars in 1981. And 1981 was the first year they started using the Star Wars term to build their supercards. They had one in June, and I think the main event for that was Ladd against Kerry Von Erich. So Ladd...
Yeah, that actually is on the network.
Oh, okay.
The matches.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That popped up on one of the unseen...
under the Hidden Gems.
Or Hidden Gems, yeah. That's right.
It wasn't very good.
Okay, well, I wasn't assuming it would be. And then they had a second Star Wars in October, I think, right around just before Halloween, if I'm not mistaken. So this was the third.
And did that have Harley and Kerry on that one?
I'm not. Let me see. I actually have the Wikipedia page open for all the 1981 shows. Let's see. No, it had the main event looked to be. Oh, gosh. I'm not sure what the main event on this show was. Kerry Von Erich and Terry Orndorff, who was subbing for Kevin, I believe, defeated the Great Kabuki and Chan Chung.
Jesus, okay.
Oh, boy.
The last match of the night, or at least on Wikipedia, was Al Madrill defeating Bill Irwin via disqualification. Ladd and Lothario had a match for the Brass Knucks Championship on that show. JYD made an appearance, defeating Armand Hussein. Chan Chung defeated Big Daddy Bundy by disqualification. It sounded like it was just a dreadful, dreadful show.
Yikes.
I mean, the 1982 team or promotion, I've said was a last place baseball team. The 1981 incarnation was like 30 games out of first place, 105 losses, I think, on the season. So anyway, 81 wasn't a good year. So here we go, the match. And one other match we didn't get to see. Blue Demon and Al Madrill defeated Armand Hussein and Carlos Zapata on the undercard. That didn't make tape, probably. That one. It went 13:52, so yeah, that could have been painful.
And I'm guessing by looking at the Rumble or the Battle Royal,
yeah.
I'm assuming Blue Demon and Al Madrill had problems in that match because they were fighting quite a bit in that
Battle
Royal.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was surprised that they were going at it. Yeah, maybe that. But they won the match, so.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. I mean, Gary Hart was booking this, right?
Yeah.
And he's been considered kind of a booking genius, and I'm kind of doubting some of his genius with this.
Well, let's be fair here. Okay, you can be the greatest booker in the world, mm-hmm. and you got this fucking lineup right. of fucking schmucks.
No, we didn't have much to work with. But as we'll see, some of the outcomes of the matches and the matches themselves weren't the best possibly conceived. Anyway, so to this Brass Knucks Championship. Well, I was excited to see Jose again. And a Brass Knucks Championship match, I was thinking, oh, this could be good. Ernie Ladd, at this point, like he went from being pretty good in the ring to being really bad pretty quickly. So, yeah, this is what we get. He has a pretty big afro at this time. That's one major note I had for this match. It's like the biggest afro I've ever seen Ernie Ladd have. Well, it's, you know, for a show like this, you got to, you know.
You know, I just know, I was just thinking, he's like, well, he's 7 foot tall, 7 foot eight with the afro.
Yeah. Bill Mercer's on commentary. So that was a good, you know, a positive for this show that we didn't have Gene Goodson. That would have been really bad. So they both have taped fists, which I guess is like a legit Brass Knucks championship match and what they would do. So a lot of punching. It was almost like a worked boxing match for most of it. And then, of course, Ladd has his gimmick, the loaded thumb deal that he uses. But this ends like super abruptly. Like Ladd hardly got any heat on Jose before Jose came off the top rope with a flying punch and got the three count. And of course, Ladd does the kick out at three because he's a big star and he can't really job. Disappointing is my last note for this match.
Yeah, you know, and Ernie Ladd, he's a weird bird, man. I've seen him like, you know, I've seen him have a lot of stinkers. I've seen him have some good matches. I saw him have good matches all the way up to like 1985. So, I mean,
yeah.
The guy, like, he picked his spots on when he wanted to have a good match. And I guess being second from the bottom, it wasn't one of them where he felt like working. Yeah. It felt, you know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What do you think of the match, John?
Well, to that point, it's like you mentioned JYD at this other show. Ladd here, you know, Ernie Ladd's been everywhere. He's one of the biggest stars in wrestling, you know, at one point or another. And he's looking, you know, he's looking around like this, like, Jesus Christ, you know, because to your point, like, I was thinking about that myself. I was like, when did Ernie Ladd start stinking? And I was like, this must have been around here. And then I went, well, wait, those ghetto street fights in Mid-South where he would dress real nice for the ghetto street fights. I remember thinking those matches were outstanding. And those were after this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he had right. Matches with Magnum TA.
Magnum, yeah. Yeah, no. Well, he's there in Mid-South working with Watts because they were almost like partners.
Yeah,
so.
He had booking partly, too. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you know. So, anyway.
And, I mean, it was good in those six-man tags against the Midnight Express and
with the Rock and Rolls. Yeah. So, the show starts because it's from the demand service. We got a warning. Before the show, you know, and it said, warning, this may be unsuitable for children. And I was like, and after an hour and 10 minutes later, I was like, it should be unsuitable for anybody. But there's, I had some fun. There's one match I actually sort of liked, actually. But it's funny because David Manning is in his referee shirt. This is before the hype video for David Manning, and he became a dude, you know, star. And they announce him, and there's a boos, just all these boos in the audience for David Manning. And I just say, he's just thinking, yeah, fuck you. I'll show you. Yeah, you boo me. I'm going to become a Von Erich too. And then Mercer on commentary, which this was interesting because this must be from the local show. Because this is before the satellite show.
Yep.
Correct?
So, yeah.
Yes, so that means somehow I didn't know Bill Mercer was already working for them or had worked for them, because they go on to satellite and it's Lawrence and eventually Mercer, but he was already there. So I'm curious. I'm sure nobody knows, but if anyone could possibly find out what the deal there was, why wasn't it Mercer to begin with?
I think he was the longtime commentator for the local Fort Worth show. If I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
From at least like the mid 70s on. So that's why. But I'm not sure where these matches actually aired at the time or what exactly.
That's true. Because you had Lorenz as the ring announcer too.
Yeah.
So anyway, to the match, I see that this is the Brass Knucks match between Jose Lothario and Ernie Ladd. And I get like half a chubby. I'm like, oh yeah, dude, I love both these guys, you know? And It was okay. There was some cool stuff in it, and the size disparity, they realized it, because they did have Ladd maybe kind of pushing him around a little bit, but the very first time Jose gets him with a punch with a super sock, he crumbles to his knees. Like, whoa, whoa. It was a really good sell. Yeah. He's all gangly, really good sell. Like, what the fuck was that? And it establishes that Jose may be the smaller guy by a big margin, but if he connects with the super sock, you're fucked up, man. And it just crumpled this giant to his knees. I like that move.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. I think that might have been the most exciting thing in the whole.
That was the best part. Well, I liked the finish because it was a flying punch. So yeah, I thought that was too cool. And there was another one at some point with the boxing thing where Ladd decides, okay, and he's taking a boxing pose, and he's going to give it a try. And he immediately whiffs on it and takes another shot to the mush from the super sock. And that was it. I mean, those were the fun parts of this match. Otherwise, I was like, hey, Jose wins. Good. And that's that. But Ladd's selling of the super sock, that was outstanding.
Yeah, and not only was it not – and it wasn't only the super sock, but it was a super sock to the body that he sold. Uh-huh. Yeah. Which made it even cooler, like, you know, like out of Rocky or something, you know? Yeah. Or even recently Creed, the movie Creed, where the old Creed ends up just body-shotting the guy to death to win, or to actually lose, but a spoiler alert.
Oh, thanks. I was going to watch that eventually, but no, I guess I don't have to.
Well, years later. This is kind of just there for the most part. And again, Jose Lothario comes across like a much bigger star in Houston. And I think it's because in Houston, obviously, they tried to build like a Mexican star, like in L.A. And in Houston, you always had like a Lothario or a Mil Ostrich or a Tito Santana. In World Class, I really haven't seen him trying in the 80s. Nope. The most part, trying to build a Mexican star because they're so busy trying to build his sons up, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so much funny you brought that up because I have some notes when we're talking about the Battle Royal and stuff about that, so might as well bring it up now. So with these early super shows, where, you know, the shows, you got Jose. They bring in Blue Demon here, and they've got a number, Almadrill, but he's more of like, hey, I'm the American one, you know? And, he's from Texas.
I'm American-Mexican, yeah.
Well, yeah, he's from Texas and speaks English, so, you know, he doesn't wear a mask or whatever. But they do rely on them. We saw the other show. They brought in the ladies who tore the house down. As soon as – and it may be just about – because it isn't just about we're building our sons, I don't think. I think it's Fritz realized – and I'm not accusing him of being a racist, okay? But I think Fritz realized that when he's not drawing at this point, you can always depend on getting some Mexican audience members, Mexican-American audience members who want to come see the Lucha Libre guys. And they do put some butts in the seats, as they say. As soon as he didn't need that, he dropped the Hispanic wrestlers like a bad habit, where everyone else down that territory didn't. Like Paul Bosch is the perfect example of knowing he has a large Spanish speaking Mexican American audience and catering to them and rewarding them for being the fans with the way he promotes those stars. We saw it on all the Houston footage, right, Pete? It was,
sure.
He would speak in Spanish and, but you know, he, you know, was a friend of the Spanish people. And I think we all need to say Fritz just seems like he's like, don't need him. Fuck him. Don't want him. You know, because there was other people of other ethnicity. Well, there was Iceman King Parsons. And there you go. It's, you know, so I'm not saying anything, but you just look at the shades on the roster. And I think
whenever he pushed, whenever he even had a Hispanic guy, so he never really got a big push, you know?
Yeah, no. I mean, Al Madrill eventually got a push at the dying days of the promotion.
Yeah, you know, Al Madrill, Al Perez, the dying days.
Perez, yeah.
I remember Chavo came in for a cup of coffee.
Really?
he was in for a six man, then never showed up ever again.
Well, probably figured it out real quick.
Well, Fritz was a Nazi.
See, I mean, if someone had to say it,
that's all you needed to say.
He's a Nazi.
That explains it all.
And then this leads us into what a mismatch on paper. Killer Tim Brooks versus El Solitario. I mean, John, what were you thinking when you're seeing this thing here?
Well, I think you're putting down El Solitario. I mean, he's perfectly, you know, a good wrestler. I mean, he's no Tim Brooks, but. Okay, Solitario. The last show, I remember saying I did not like that match at all, but everything, but, you know, I'm not really familiar with the guy. He's better here, you know, this match is better. But here's the thing about Solitario. He, whatever Verkakta Hall of Fame, you know, they got out there, he deserves to be in all of them for that leather fringe outfit that he wears to the ring. That is immediately in my top five greatest wrestler gear that they wear to the ring. It is cool as fuck. It's all fringes and brown leather and a cool design and with bell bottoms on it. And it goes with the mask and he looks fucking boss. I'm not overselling it. I want to see a good picture of it because it's badass. And Bill Mercer even says, he's like, oh, that all leather suit of his is magnificent. And Bill Mercer, who we talked about, you know, who doesn't apparently know as much about wrestling, but then he dropped. It's so funny because I didn't know Blue Demon was there yet. So he's like, oh, those great Mexican wrestlers like Blue Demon and El Horcorn.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck is he talking about? Is he talking about Halcon?
It's El Halcon.
Halcon. He said Harcorn.
Yeah, I didn't get that from him. I thought he said it right, but.
I rewound it twice. And I was like,
okay, no, then I'll take your word for it. I just wasn't paying that close attention. But yeah, I know he said it.
The reason I was paying attention was because I didn't know Blue Demon had been there for this night. I was like, well, maybe he does know some wrestling. He just dropped two names. You know, maybe he knows a little. And the match is what it was, but it had the one thing, and I always like this, and you don't see it anymore anywhere, is the bad guy who doesn't immediately start cheating or the bad guy who eventually is going to cheat. He's just waiting for the right opportunity. But the bad guy who, because they mentioned on commentary, he's like, you know, he'll try to play it straight until he gets frustrated. You know, until he's frustrated. And the way Tim Brooks was selling that, it was legitimately just frustrating. I love that idea of a bad guy. Like, every night he's down there, he's like, I'm going to win without cheating this time. I'm not going to cheat. I'm not going to do it. I can do it. I can do it. I'm killer Tim Brooks. And no, every time he gets frustrated, he fucks it up and he gets back in the locker room and he beats himself up. Next time. And otherwise, the match was sort of... It was inoffensive, but it wasn't great.
I mean, the styles clash. That's pretty much what it was.
Yeah.
You know? One guy looked really good, and Brooks did what he could do, which was bump well for him.
Exactly. And but, toss him around. Because what he was doing was – he's not going to lucha wrestle him, obviously. So he has to play the whole, I'm going to be – he's the lumbering brute that you can – and all I can do is throw you into the corner. You know, and you just play off of that, you know, and it's okay. I wouldn't say it stinks. I would just say it was okay.
Yeah, it just wasn't good. What about you, Kelly? What are your thoughts here? And then,
Are you in the
Styles Clash? Okay.
Yeah, it was a Styles Clash. I think they booked El Solitario without thinking who he was going to wrestle. And then they get to the show and they're like, okay, who can we match up with him? And Killer Tim Brooks drew the short straw, maybe. I don't know. Because, yeah. And
Brooks has bad matches with everybody, so might as well have a bad match.
Well, there's that and there's also because Killer Tim Brooks isn't the greatest, but compared to a lot of the guys on that fucking roster who are bad guys, he's certainly passable. I mean, he wrestled in Georgia. He's passable. So they have to give him someone passable.
Yeah, no, it's true.
But, honestly, if you look at all the guys on this Raw who worked on the main show matches here that we're reviewing, I think he might have been the worst guy on the whole roster here.
Brooks?
Yeah. I don't know.
I think Lothario's better.
Carlos Zapata.
I'm not talking Zapata worked in what, the Battle Royal?
No, but that's the thing. Here's a weird thing is that the tag champs, the America's tag champs were Brooks and Hussein. But the tag match on this show was Hussein and Zapata. So I'm wondering if Solitario was first matched up with Zapata and he's like, nah, I don't
want to. Or maybe he was matched up with Blue Demon.
Yeah, well, anyway, we're thinking too much.
On paper. What showed up on paper, I honestly think Tim Brooks is the worst guy. We don't have that match on paper, so.
Right.
So what if he was just given a choice? He's just like, yeah, it's either Brooks or Hussein. Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take Brooks over Hussein.
Weird. And Brooks also, it's for the light heavyweight championship of the world, and Brooks just doesn't.
Look light?
Yeah, just technically he may weigh enough to be considered a light heavyweight, but he just doesn't look like one.
No.
I know. I laughed at that, too. I was like, Tim Brooks is wrestling for a light heavyweight belt?
Yeah. It's just strange. He's already won half of the tag champs. It seemed like this match was just thrown together at the last second. I think it was. And yeah, it wasn't too much. I mean, Solitario had a super dive off the top rope that at the time nobody else was doing, like no non-Mexican wrestlers were doing in America, really. That was cool, to the outside, dive to the outside. But then the match, also, it was very much like the first one, just ended abruptly. Solitario, the body press he gave Brooks looked pretty clumsy too for the win. And Brooks was apparently busted open at some point, but...
Yeah, they posted him out on the outside.
Okay, yeah, but you couldn't even see it from our, like, the angle we have with the footage.
You see it more in the Battle Royal.
Yeah, exactly. In the Battle Royal, he's a bloody mess. But in this, you couldn't even see it. It happened right at the end. So that...
Oh, I completely missed it. I was wondering when the Battle Royal, he had the Spirit of 76 thing on his head.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Yeah, because Mercer mentions it in this match that Brooks is busted open, but the viewer at home can't see it anyway. And then good old Al came out to congratulate Solitario at the end.
He'll get from the Mexican on the win.
But yeah.
He came out. He's like, finally, a Mexican gets ahead in this fucking company.
Yeah. So, but another disappointing match, I thought.
Yeah, but I thought Solitario looked like really good, though. You know, he felt like, honestly, if he had the right opponent, I'd be curious on what. I know Kevin would probably just beat the shit out of him, so I don't want to see that. But I don't know who.
Well, he'd have to wrestle a heel.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I don't know who would fit that bill, really. That'd have to be another luchador, I guess. And I also like Solitario doing that. I don't know what you want to call it, but between the rope dive in between the two rings.
Right,
where he did like a plancha and landed on Brooks in between the two rings. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was okay. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Brooks bumped well for Solitario, but like Johnny was saying, all he did was like rude to him in the corners and stuff, and yeah, it was total styles clash.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Then we get to the Texas Death Match between Fritz Von Erich and Kabuki, which this is the match that the first few months of the TV we reviewed was based on.
Yeah.
And then the whole entire, felt like the first 6 months of the TV, or first 4 months of the TV, 3 or 4 months of the TV is based all on this and the angle. What were your thoughts here, Kelly?
It wasn't great. Texas Death Match. Yeah, I was definitely hoping for a lot more, but Fritz he's just too slow now. I'm not sure his exact age at this point in time, but
82.
He's showing his years in the ring for sure. He doesn't have too much left in the tank. But he was besieged by autograph seekers before the match, treated like
holy shit,
treated like a king, like the immortal one that he is.
It was a swarm of people. Yeah. Like I've never seen, because we see that all the time with the audience people, the audience seekers. Yeah, yeah. I've never seen one that big. There were people who had no earthly shot of getting his autograph, who were still in the back, like waving, like threats. That's impressive.
Yeah, no, I mean the guy was a legend in the area, no doubt about it. The match had heat. I mean, it was the main event. Again, positioned in the middle of the show, and also where a battle royal is the last match, just like the Super Bowl of wrestling.
You find a winning combination, you stick with it.
That was, yeah, apparently. Fritz, a lot of claw attempts. Right from the get-go, he had the abdominal claw. We had some brawling on the outside where a chair got involved, and I thought, okay, here we go. We're going to get some really good fighting maybe. And it was gritty. Like, it was all just punching and, you know, there was no attempt at any wrestling. Like, so it was...
When you said that, I thought, like, the first 3 or 4 minutes was really good.
Yeah.
And then it just fell off a cliff to me.
Yeah, that's basically the best way of putting it, is that it started off with promise and then just went nowhere. So this is a true Texas Death Match where you have to put a guy down for a pin, and then if they don't answer the count of 10... the match is over. The WWF, of course, never, they would have tons of Texas death matches, but they would never do it that way. They would just do like a straight, like no DQ street fight.
Yeah. That's because they're generally boring. I saw
I saw
Zbyszko versus Bockwinkel live in a Texas death match.
Yeah.
And maybe it was great. All I know is live, we were just like, oh, this is boring.
That's a good point. Because this one is, it gets pretty boring. Fritz gets the first three counts after a long iron claw. And then Gary Hart got involved. And there was some good stuff here. Hart took some bumps, started cheating a lot. Kabuki was busted open. Hart took a corner posting, didn't he, at one point? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then Manning got tossed from one ring to the next and took, like, a Superman dive. And that was a pretty nice bump, actually. I popped for that. And then Fritz ate the exposed turnbuckle. Oh, yeah, that's what Hart was doing. He tore off the turnbuckle. Then neither man could answer the 10 count. For some reason, they were selling it way worse than it needed to be. And then Bronco made the ruling that, you know, someone had to win. So the first man to his feet wins. Hart cheats some more, and Fritz gets pulled from the ring. And Kabuki barely makes it to his feet for the win. Apparently, this is the first time Fritz ever lost a Texas death match.
First. Ever.
And this was another criticism I have in the match, is that they didn't really, or Mercer didn't really put that over as super significant. Fritz losing his first ever Texas death match. It was kind of matter of factly.
Well, you know, it is stated. Tino down there. That's just, you know, down in Texas, I imagine everyone knows that.
Yeah, because I like the idea of the finish. Like, Fritz losing a Texas death match is cool, and losing it to Kabuki. Of all people, you know, that's cool. That makes Kabuki.
Yeah, it should have been played up like huge.
Yeah, it should have been played up huge. It should have made Kabuki even like a greater heel, a bigger monster. But it just sort of just ends here. That was just the direction the match.
And in hindsight, Kelly, I'm trying to remember, did they even put this over like being the first time Fritz ever lost a Texas death match on the TV?
I can't. Remember, I thought this was
the thing. If they did, they didn't push it hard.
No, they pushed the blinding part.
Yeah, the blinding.
But that had already happened. For some reason, I thought it was in this match that he was blinded.
No, this was the payoff.
But they replayed this match on the TV.
Well, they talked about it, and I thought they talked
Kevin
about it.
Because I remember this angle because Kevin comes out.
Yeah, really? No, it wasn't. Or maybe
That wasn't this match. That was something else.
No, that was that was from like maybe the Fort Worth show, or it was from another arena. Okay. But I thought that this was the match where he was blinded, but no, it happened, I guess, on TV before this, because he's already 25% blind going into this.
Now you bring that up, it's baffling because I'm like. They didn't make a big deal about this on the TV. We watched it all. It was just about the blindness.
Yeah.
And because I love that idea, you know, even if they didn't explain it well enough going in, just that's how it ended. And Fritz Von Erich loses his first. And I'm like, and he loses it to Gary Hart's Kabuki? Oh, who blinded him? I go, that's badass. And they never speak of it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yep. What are your thoughts here, John?
Let me just get past the swarm of autographs here. I think I like this a little bit more than you guys did. But me, I like the Fritz match. Mercer mentioned that Kabuki is wearing a authentic 300-year-old samurai warrior uniform.
Yeah.
And I look at ringside and I realize the timekeeper is John Cazale. So, you know, good to see the.
Wow, he's still alive.
Up and around, you know, maybe he faked his death and moved to Texas. You know, maybe he was like, I made 5 awesome movies. Fuck it. I'm going to go become a timekeeper in Texas, change my identity. And okay, so I was thinking about the booking of this because part of the rules of the Texas death match that you guys didn't mention was this can take place in both rings.
Oh, yes.
And I like that because, when they're thinking about that, backstage, Fritz and Gary Hart, whatever. It's a way to give everybody there a chance to get see it up close or up closer, you know, by going back and forth in the ring. And it weirdly makes it sound more dangerous, even though it's not, you know, it can happen in both rings. Ooh, you know, but it does sound more dangerous for some reason. Gary Hart was just minding his own business at ringside, and Fritz is like laying on the apron, and Gary Hart's not interfering. He's just sitting there, you know, mouthing off, and Fritz just kicks him. And I was like, yeah, what a dick. You know, he did. It wasn't cheating. And that's all. And all through this, Gary Hart isn't laying a hand on Fritz or doing anything until the very end. And every time Fritz gets near him, Fritz like beats the shit out of him. Gary Hart's bumping around like a maniac, the guy who doesn't bump. But you watch the way he did it. The one, there was two main bumps he took. One, he's standing on the apron. He's got his hand on the rope and he drops to his back, but doesn't really connect and just swoops his legs up high. And it looks really impressive, but he isn't risking hurting his back, but it looks great. And the posting one, he takes, does the posting and he just quickly but slowly lays down perfectly. He doesn't bump. He just lays down, but he does it really well as a whoop, you know, and I was like, that's great, man. You know, that he, for this match, you know, he figured out, you know, that he was going to do that. Maybe someone, he was reading some dirt sheet. Gary Hart never bumps. I'll show you, you cocksucker. Gary Hart. Oh, speaking of David Manning taking that bump. What point, Gary, before that, Gary Hart punches Manning. And maybe it's just because I want it to be true, but I could swear it seemed like he gave him a stiff punch. The way Manning was selling it, it was kind of just like, ow, gee, like, ow, you know, like, and then Fritz throws him across the ring, has to take that bump. Maybe Fritz and Gary Hart together, you know, going, oh, so you want to be a referee, kid? You know, you want to be one of the Von Erichs, do you? Okay, this is your initiation, like, fuck you up in the ring. And, you know, the old who gets up first. It's the most dramatic way to do this gimmick is neither of them can get up.
Right.
The first one up wins. You know, it's cliche, but it works, you know. And I had no idea Kabuki was going to win this match. It took me completely by surprise. I was like, wait, what? That's what they did? Because, again, they never talked about it. And I was very impressed with that finish. And the problem was all the way up to the first fall, I thought it was very exciting. And then the second fall happens and it just dies a death until the end with the interference. Because it's just them laying there.
Yeah.
But I think I enjoyed it a little bit more than you guys.
Yeah, sounds like it. Then we get the six-man tag.
Pete's not impressed.
Then we get the six-man tag.
Oh, boy.
And this is like a staple of Houston, Kelly.
Oh, really?
Where they ran it every January, I think 4th or something, or January 1st, first of the year. Except here they shot it better, where they had the rings in two different like angles. In Houston, they do it like they'd stack them back to back. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
Like here's a straight line.
Yeah.
The other one would be a perpendicular straight line.
Right. Yeah, I've seen that before. Yeah.
Okay, it makes it a lot harder to follow.
Yeah.
Well, this wasn't too good either.
Yeah, this was only good, one camera.
I still thought it was the best match on the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But that's how bad the show was. But I think it works live better than it does on tape, this type of match. What were you thinking, Johnny?
Okay, so wait a minute. The elephant in the room here is we got the Von Erichs, all three brothers, versus Wild Bill Irwin, Captain Frank Dusek, and
Tim Koo?
No, 10.
I got a goo.
Like the number 10. And then goo, G-U.
It's goo?
Goo, yeah.
It's Tengu. I thought it was Tim Koo, then I thought it was Tim Do. And then I thought it was Ken Do. Like, that was the original, like, wordplay thing Gary Hart was coming up with before he could get his hands on Kabuki, because, you know, Kendo, Kendo stick, you know, I'm working on, I'm spitballing this still until he figures out Kabuki, because apparently that's what happened, because they're like, yeah, Ken, I'm gonna keep calling him Kendo, because he can do. You know, he was with Gary Hart, and then Gary Hart got Kabuki and fired him. It was this story of Ken Do, who I've never seen before. Is he have blonde hair?
Yeah, bleached blonde hair.
Bleached blonde hair, and it was it face paint or a mask?
I don't think he had face paint.
I couldn't make it out. I was watching it on a tiny phone.
In the 70s in Calgary, he was Mr. Sakurada, who teamed with Mr. Hito as their, you know, that was Calgary's Japanese heel team.
There's actually Calgary, they showed up in Houston. There's footage of the team, and they were really good.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Hito especially is a legend in Calgary, because he wrestled there for years and years, eventually turned babyface. When I first started watching Stampede in 86, he was still there, and he was a babyface. And I believe he eventually settled down in Calgary and owned a restaurant. But the two of them actually trained Bret Hart. That's one of their claims.
Yeah, they trained Bret.
Oh, he's one of those guys?
They had JJ as their manager, JJ Dillon. And they had a great series of matches against Jose Lothario and Tiger Conway Jr. Fantastic tag matches.
Wow, that's cool. Because I didn't know they worked outside of Calgary, because they were there for like the second half of the 70s. They were there almost the whole time, I think.
Yeah, they were hated.
And in Calgary, they were very hated too. But yeah, that's crazy that he popped up here.
So, I have to toss my entire Scooby-Doo joke. There it goes. So, apparently, say it again. Was it Tengu?
Ten, like the number
Tengu.
Ten.
Tengu. Okay, Tengu. I'll just say Tengu. He's now with Frank and Bill. These are happier days for Frank and Bill. They're still, you know, together. Maybe that, you know, Tengu is what split them apart. He's with his beautiful blonde locks. Again, swarms of fans. You know, not quite as many as for Fritz, but swarms of fans for the Von Erich boys. Yep. Of course, also with them, as announced, after they announced the Von Erichs, they go, and with them, their biggest fan. What do they say? Their brother, Mike Von Erich.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, yuck. I feel bad for Mike Von Erich. I'm like, you really? Do you know these guys are? They're like tough, rough, you know, kids. You know, they get, you know, smoking weed and getting in trouble. And he's come out waving, you know, and he's his brother's biggest fans. I feel terrible for him.
Yeah.
I had the same point. I go, these two rings, the ring thing, that works for the live crowd, but it ain't great on the television of that day. You know,
no.
Very hard to follow one camera going back and forth. And I didn't get the tag rules for a while. I was like, why are they all tagging? Like, I thought it was going to be Texas Tornado or some, the whole weird tag structure threw me, and I don't remember seeing that in the Houston ones.
It was, you know, they did it. Wasn't? Trust me.
Well, you know what? Maybe because it's Houston, they just did it better, you know.
And then they remember it also the footage with this was actually set up differently. The rings there, probably didn't notice that they were two guys in the middle because it stacked up and it was a lot harder to follow.
Okay, but there was a little period though where. It was Kevin and David fighting Dusik and Irwin. It was like maybe a minute or 2 minutes of just them it focused on, and they were having a hot little match. And it was very brief. Again, Kevin, to wrap it up, you know, I think I would love to have seen this live or shot better, but I just had a hard time following it. And it's over. The Von Erichs win. Place goes ape shit. And the heels are on the outside. Frank Dusik is just leaving the ring. He's not going near the Von Erichs. He's just like groggy and kind of just glances back at the Von Erichs and walks by them. And Kevin runs over and punches him in the face and knocks him out of the ring for no fucking reason. No reason. And everyone goes, yay. And I was like, what the fuck is that, man? That's crazy. I think it was probably more entertaining live than I thought it was on the TV here.
What about you, Kel?
Yeah, I'm very similar to Johnny in my views. It would have been, well, live it wouldn't be so confusing. I was totally confused. I didn't understand at first that it was going to be two matches going on simultaneously.
Yeah, and then the guys in the middle of the ring tag in.
Right. So my one note was that here we go, another TNA-esque gimmick from World Class. Two shows in a row.
They're ripping me off.
Yeah. So this whole show has two rings because the main event's a two-ring battle royal. I don't think we really established that for listeners at home who haven't seen this. So every match, of course, has the two rings. But I mean, it's a creative use of the two rings instead of just using one ring. You're using both. But yeah, it's confusing. We just have the one camera that just pans back and forth. So you can't really get a sense of either match. You get bits and pieces of it.
No, yeah, it's terrible television. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't really know what's going on exactly or what stories are being told here. You get a few big high spots. Like, at one point, Kerry dives from one ring to the next, which was cool, although he barely made it to Dusik, but still, that was a nice spot. It was just kind of a mess. What happened at the finish? Gu by accident got hit by Irwin, right, and then Kevin got the pin. But yeah, this was just a showcase for the Von Erich boys at a big show, on a big show. Put them all together. I don't think this was like a hot feud or anything, but I may be wrong.
The only thing they did mention is that Irwin and David were having a feud. That's it.
Right. So it was just a showcase for them. Get them all in one match. Get the crowd to pop for them. Because they, you know, of course, Fritz had big things planned for all these boys. Tengu also wrestled as the American, or not, I don't know if that's the right way of putting it, but Kendo Nagasaki later on in the 80s in Florida, Memphis. The more famous Kendo Nagasaki was a British wrestler in the 70s.
Oh, whoa. Tengu is Kendo fucking Nagasaki?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like from Florida and Crockett?
Florida.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I loved him.
Yeah, I just know him mostly from like the mags, like the pitchers and stuff from the 80s. Very scary looking character.
He was the most threatening bald guy with the fringe hair you've ever seen.
Right. Yeah, he definitely took the Kabuki gimmick. And
also known as Dragon Master.
Dragon, right. And that at the end of
it. Wait a minute, he's Dragon Master too?
Yeah.
God, this guy.
I didn't know that either.
He had so many different aliases.
Well, Kendo Nagasaki, I know, was Dragon Master.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk it? Kendo Nagasaki, the man of, you know, a million faces.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're all the same guy. But yeah, it was.
They better be.
Another nothing match.
Yeah, I like this better than you guys. Probably because I'm used to it from watching the Houston matches, so I was able to put my eyes a little bit more trained for it, if it will, which is sad when you have to train your eye to watch wrestling. I think I'm just more a little bit more familiar with the rules and how it works, and maybe resonated a little bit more for me, because I found it, I felt they pushed the action a lot more go.
It was definitely a work ratey match, or the most work ratey match of the show. Yeah.
And then that leads us to the 16-man two ring battle royal for $10,000. I actually like the concept of a two-ring battle royal, because if you're booking it right, it could actually lead to some fun stories and fun stuff. It didn't translate here. But,
of course not.
But it could, you know? What were you thinking, Kelly, when you saw this?
Well, it was billed as a 16-man battle royal. It was clearly announced as that, but there's only 14 men in here, and I had to pause and count multiple times.
I didn't even dawn on me that they were cheating us.
Yeah.
Talk about having a keen eye. That's a keen eye.
Yeah, they cheated us two wrestlers. And there could have been other guys that had wrestled earlier could have appeared, but they didn't.
Ernie Ladd said, fuck you.
Yeah. Kevin said, fuck you, too, for some reason, because Carrie and David are in it, but Kevin isn't.
Amused friends.
I'm going to win the Battle Royal, goddammit. And so Blue Demon's in this, and I was like, is this the real Blue Demon, the famous Blue Demon?
Yeah, it is.
I don't think I've ever seen him wrestle. I've seen clips of him in movies from the 60s and 70s. This was him. Yeah. Because I don't think there's much actual footage of him wrestling on tape. I could be wrong, but...
No, his son's everywhere, but not him.
I mean, he's like number two to El Santo as the all-time lucha legend.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's eliminated in this match before Zapata... Richard Blood, a few other guys. Yeah, El Negro Assassin lasts longer than Blue Demon.
Well, you gotta protect El Negro Assassin
because he's the homestead. That's his territory.
He's mask match with him.
Oh yeah, he'd say, but Kelly's right. Blue Demon's moving on the next day. Yeah. The guy's got to stay there.
El Negro Assassin. Yeah, he's there every day, so we got to protect him.
Or maybe Blue Demon was like, you paying me how much to lend my name to this shit? Battle Royal, huh? I'm getting in. I'm getting the fuck out.
Yeah, no, he didn't last long. So we have Big Daddy Bundy in here. We have good old Al, we have Hussein, we have Irwin, we have Zapata, David Carey, Frank Dusick, Jose Lothario, Tim Brooks with the Spirit of 76 bandage, like Johnny mentioned, who's a crimson mask this whole way. So that was a highlight.
Yeah, the only thing to me that was anything worth a shit happened was that bump Carey did where they threw him across both rings.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and Mercer kept confusing El Negro Assassin with Blue Demon, at least in the early stages. I mean, they did look very similar. I mean, El Negro Assassin was also in blue. Yeah, like this one started out fine, but then once the eliminations got going, like you have with a lot of battle royals, it's just one after the next.
Well, the other thing I loved in this was when he announced the $10,000 check. And the wrestlers attacked him and tried to steal his check.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and Lawrence actually showed some personality there. He was like, back, calm down. Yeah.
Other than that, this is terrifyingly bad.
But after that happens, he has to list all their names still.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't announced them yet. So then he goes, David Von Erich, Kevin Von Erich, David Von Erich, Kerry Von Erich, Big Daddy Bundy. It just doesn't really, like a tobacco auctioneer. It's hilarious.
Yeah, really fast. Yeah, this was better than the Body Slam Battle Royal. I guess that's another plus.
Yeah, that's saying nothing.
But yeah, like I said, like the rapid fire eliminations, it was just like a modern, crappy WWE Battle Royal where everyone's eliminated in like 2 minutes. And
the fuck, he came down who to Irwin and who?
Bundy and Irwin. And Bundy goes over and gets $10,000. I guess maybe this is the beginning of his addiction to money.
Yeah. No, dude, he mentioned it last week in one of the interviews. When I told you, he said, he's like, you know, this Von Erichs, they've been cheating out of me money since I got here. I won a battle royal. I was supposed to win $10,000. You know what I got? $100. So maybe he was really green to the business and thought he was going to win $10,000.
So he did mention that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They only paid me $100 for that. I was supposed to win 10 grand. That was his promo.
Yeah. Well, Fritz is like, well, your my booking fee is $9,500
$900. You just consider yourself lucky to be sitting at the learning tree of the Von Erichs. No wonder they said, fuck you.
Yeah.
And use this piece of rope for a belt.
Yeah.
Oh, so what's your idea, sir? Because, you know, he's probably, yeah, whatever you want, sir. Yeah, well, we're here's the thing. Yeah, where are you from? New Jersey, sir. Okay, we're going to put these jeans on you and wear a rope for a belt. Fuck.
And you're from Alaska now. Yeah, and you're sleeping in the barn. And we're garnishing all your wages. Yeah. yeah, no, but like it's like you said, Johnny, all these, the heels are actually the baby faces, and the Von Erichs are the actual heels of the promotion. Oh my, yeah, all right.
Boy, the heels suck so bad, they don't get heat, they're horrible. God, December can't come soon enough.
Oh, dude, so when I saw the double battle royal and I saw the rules of it, because if you thought this went quick, I don't know what you were watching, because I was like, oh, this has to all happen twice. I thought to myself, like, somehow I doubt this is going to be as good as that one Pete and I watched for Space City from Mid-South with the Freebirds in it.
Yeah.
And DiBiase. It was one of my favorite things we watched from that footage. I was like, somehow it's going to be kind of tough for them to maybe they will. I kind of doubt it. Like, and let me just see real quick. I just looked at it and I took this one note. I was like, this is just a ring full of nothing going on. Just nothing. There's just nothing going on. But I one little thing, King Kong Bundy. I thought he took a really good bump over the rope. I love seeing young spry King Kong Bundy who flies around and shit. Mm. You know, it's fun to see. Otherwise, yeah, we saw the worst battle royal ever last time. And this was just one of the most boring battle royals ever, which is like most battle royals from the 80s. They're,
Before we wind it up, what was your favorite match on the show, guys? Mine was the six-man tag, but I guess you guys have something different. What was yours, Kelly?
Oh, I guess I'll go with the Texas Death Match. And it was by no means a match I'm going to recommend to anybody to watch or anything, but it had stakes. It had significance. It's hard to pick anything on this show.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. John, do you want to be about you, brother?
Oh, well, you know what? I'm going to, with all this negativity about everything, Texas Deathmatch, sure. I want to end this on a positive note for the holiday season and really quickly tell or retell my King Kong Bundy story when I met him. Because we should end on an up note and keep it about wrestling.
So does this mean you're not answering the question?
I'm deferring to this real quick. Right before WrestleMania 2, Bundy's facing Hogan. We see that King Kong Bundy's going to be at a 7-Eleven in Pennsylvania signing autographs. I convince my mom.
7-Eleven?
A 7-Eleven. I'm not. A 7-Eleven on a Saturday afternoon. And we convince my mom to drive me and my buddy Joey Wolfman to go see it. And we get there. And just a bit of a line, and there he is, King Kong Bundy, sitting behind a folding table with 8 giant Gatorade bottles, because it was really warm that day, and in a big Hawaiian shirt. And he's signing glossies, and there's all these little kids, and he's being like, here you go, but they're all frightened of him. Or a few of them are like, oh, Hulk Hogan's going to beat you, and he's all just like, there you go. And me and Joey get up there, and we're 16, and he signs it. And we both go, hey, we just want to let you know, man, we hope you kick Hogan's ass this Sunday. And he looks up, and he goes, thanks, boys. I really appreciate that. and gave us our autographs. And we talk about that to this day. We're like, King Kong Bundy's a fucking man. He's such a nice guy.
Supposedly got into a fight with Scott Hall recently at a
thing. Yes, yeah.
And put the big time hurt on him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I read that.
Who Bundy fucked up Scott Hall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't fuck with King Kong, and he's nowhere near as big as he used to be. You still don't fuck with that guy.
Maybe we can get him for an interview eventually. No?
What?
I said maybe we could get him for an interview eventually.
There you go. Well, Pete's got connections.
Yeah,
apparently.
You know, we used to do that from time to time.
From time to time. Maybe he'll be signing autographs at a 7-Eleven. We can get a hookup.
There we go.
Well, you know, I can think of all. See, if only I knew somebody who was constantly going to these events full of wrestlers.
Right. I know. All right. So, Johnny, what was your favorite match? Are you going to.
I said the Fritz one.
Oh, okay. All right, man. We'll end it on that note. Kelly, anything you want to plug?
Well, I mean, one positive note for the future is that this was Christmas 1981, and I have a hunch that in 1 year, 1 year's time, in Christmas 1982, the show will be slightly better than this one.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a positive thing to look forward to. Nothing to plug, but I will put the link to this show in the on PWO and in the in a tweet, and so all our great listeners can watch along just like they have been with the network shows.
Oh, cool.
Hey.
There's a Christmas present.
Oh, really? nice present.
Oh, and I am the Santa Claus. Happy birthday, Cole.
No. You know what that's like? You know what that's like? That's like the end of the root of Rudolph, because yay, sure, you know, they take the misfit toys off the island and give them to kids. What kid wants a fucking train with square wheels? Some disappointed child getting a disappointing present.
I mean, Kelly's the guy who watched all the fucking Dominic DiNucci Baron matches, so he likes making other people watch bad mat wrestling. So.
Oh, Dominic and the Baron are heads and tails better than most of these motherfuckers.
It's on par, I'd say, honestly.
Oh, and we should thank David for this footage.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, he's Peach Chaos on PWO, so thanks a lot, David. He's been sharing a lot of great stuff.
Are you sure that's how you say it?
Peach Chaos? I think so.
Peach Chaos.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you think it was?
I have no idea. I thought it was like Peachos.
Peachos?
Yeah.
I think it's Peach Chaos. Anyway.
Peach Chaos.
Thanks, David.
I have no idea even what that means.
Mm. I do.
What does it mean?
I don't think you want to hear what I think it means. It's Christmas.
All right. We'll just end on that note. Everybody, have a great Christmas. Happy New Year. And keep on supporting WorldCast Wednesdays, baby. Have a good one.
We have no jingle bells or sleigh to display on Christmas Day, for there's no snow down Texas way, but we sure mean it when we say Merry Texas Christmas, you all. Merry Texas Christmas, you all. May your days be sunny and bright, may your hearts be happy and light. Merry Texas Christmas, you all.
Merry Texas Christmas, you all. Merry Texas Christmas, you all.
May your days be sunny and bright, may your hearts be happy and light. Merry Texas Christmas, you all.